defendant. So first, we have an acquittal. I dispute the state's position that this evidence is overwhelming when you have an acquittal on one of the charges relating to the similar conduct. My second response to that statement is that you have multiple witnesses testifying, but you have a material state witness in Officer Sonstebo, a law enforcement officer who we know is afforded certain credibility being a law enforcement officer, an officer who was involved in the investigation of this case from the very beginning, an officer who had contact with mom, who had contact with the stepdad, who had contact with the other witnesses in this case. We have an interview with Officer Sonstebo where he says, "Don't tell Miss Nikki." So we have this preliminary interview where there are questions raised.
Can you pause on that for a second? What is that? I noted that in your brief. I'm not quite following that. I didn't find that in a transcript because there's not a citation in your brief to that particular thing of "don't tell Ms. Nikki." If he says Ms. Nikki was there at the interview, I'm not sure what the "don't tell Ms. Nikki."
Right.
He said she was there. What does that mean? Don't tell.
In the preliminary interview, which occurred April 19th, 2012, that he testified Ms. Nikki was there. We have that interview itself where we know Ms. Nikki wasn't there because he said, "Don't tell Ms. Nikki." The issue is that at that point, we don't.
In the transcript of
the interview itself.
Okay.
We don't know who Ms. Nikki is at that point. The state did not disclose Nicole Thorson as a witness. The state did not call her as a witness. So at trial, we have Officer Sonstebo's testimony that Nicole Thorson, a school-based social worker and Lakeland mental health professional, has been involved in this investigation with me from the beginning, and that's not true. We know that that's not true.
Could AM repeat, Ms. Nikki, that appears throughout the transcript. I think that's how AM called her. I mean, are you saying that somehow the defendant didn't realize that Ms. Nikki was Nicole?
Was Nicole Thorson, correct. Nicole Thorson, in this case, not disclosed as a state witness, as far as the record, you know, shows us, no contact with trial defense counsel and Nicole Thorson, no investigation done into Nicole Thorson.
So even though there's testimony about Ms. Nikki, the defense counsel had no idea who Ms. Nikki was? That seems surprising from the context of reading the transcript.
Certainly, but nothing in the record that I can find demonstrates that counsel contacted Nicole Thorson, knew about Nicole Thorson, was not disclosed as a state witness. So that discrepancy, I do think, is an issue.
Okay, you know, I'd like to change gears for just a second. This is a case in which your client directly appealed his conviction to this court. His conviction was affirmed. He filed an 80-page pro se petition for post-conviction relief, and he was denied relief by this court.
Yes.
The district court and this court.
Yes.
So this is his second post-conviction petition. With respect to this information and the affidavit from Nicole Thorson, why could that not have been discovered before or at the time of the first post-conviction petition?
Where I think alleged perjury was raised, right?
Certainly. If you, as Your Honor noted, the 80-page petition for post-conviction relief, my pro se client, who was incarcerated at the time of filing that petition, was throwing spaghetti at the wall. He was raising issues. He knew something wasn't right with his case, and he raised a number of issues.
Including perjury.
Including an allegation of perjury, yes. However, he was not given an evidentiary hearing to pursue that issue. As I've noted multiple times, he was incarcerated. He was pro se. He had no avenue to investigate. He did not have.
He attached two affidavits. How did he obtain those affidavits if he didn't have avenue to investigate?
I would have to speculate, Your Honor. The record does not indicate how those came to be. But we have someone who's incarcerated, limited access to phone calls, limited access to research materials, untrained in the law, a record that at trial we discover Nicole Thorson, but prior to that we have Ms. Nikki.
In the first petition, when it alleged perjury by the officer, was it specific to Ms. Thorson's absence from the interview? In other words, did the allegation say that the perjury was that Ms. Thorson was there?
There were a couple of points raised in the first petition for post-conviction relief, including perjury as to the presence of someone at that interview.
So the only difference now is that there's an affidavit from Ms. Thorson. I mean, in terms of the specific issue was raised previously.
At this point in time,
right.
Yes.
Okay.
This court found in that petition for post-conviction relief that these issues were known or should have been known and are therefore barred. And without presenting more, the defendant cites case law, but did not have more to present that takes this beyond the realm of a direct appeal or beyond the realm of the record that we had at that time.
Isn't it barred by the two-year statute of limitations now?
With respect to the two-year statute of limitations, our statutes are clear. There is an avenue for post-conviction relief. The general rule is that a petition for post-conviction relief must be raised within 2 years after the conclusion of the direct appeal. There are five articulated exceptions to that rule. And here, the petitioner meets two of those exceptions. The first exception is we have alleged actual innocence. Now, actual innocence requires a lot. Actual innocence in this case, without an evidentiary hearing, we can't get over that hurdle of demonstrating by clear and convincing evidence that he's actually innocent. We need to be given that evidentiary hearing in order to prove that. But there is a clear exception for actual innocence. My client has maintained his innocence. He testified in his own defense at trial. He testified categorically denying these allegations. He maintained his innocence at the time of his direct appeal, clearly unsatisfied with his direct appellate counsel, filing that pro se supplemental brief. He continued to challenge his conviction, maintaining his actual innocence. The actual innocence exception allows you beyond the realm of that two-year time filing deadline. The second exception under subdivision 5 is the interest of justice, and here we know that there is false testimony. We know that testimony is from a material state witness. And the interest of justice demands us that we have an opportunity to attempt to correct that error. Now, the state points out in its brief.
Well, even if that testimony was false and Nicole Thorson's testimony in her affidavit is correct, I mean, somebody's not recollecting whether she was there or wasn't there, there's a dispute. But even if she wasn't there and he testified she was there, how do you get from that to actual innocence?
This goes back to the thread we start pulling, that we have someone involved in every stage of the investigation and trial. We have a law enforcement officer who, for some reason, tells this young girl, don't tell Miss Nikki. We have his testimony that he immediately shut down the interview, but then he kind of changes his testimony a little bit. No, it asked a few more questions to substantiate this, and then we scheduled the corner house interview. He initially said the interview wasn't recorded, but it was recorded. So we have issues, we know, with this law enforcement officer. Now, Your Honor,
I agree, though, that the affidavit itself doesn't show actual innocence.
I agree that we can't establish by clear and convincing evidence actual innocence unless we are given the opportunity to have an evidentiary hearing, at which time we can present adverse witnesses in this case in order to meet that burden. The affidavit itself goes to, perjured testimony, which on its own is an unfairness that needs to be remedied. But it was an abuse of discretion for the district court to see this affidavit and say, no, the record and files conclusively establish that he is not entitled to relief. We have an affidavit that calls into question the testimony of a key state witness. We need an opportunity to substantiate that claim. Now, trial defense counsel.
Well, even assuming you can substantiate that claim, I'm having difficulty understanding the materiality of it.
This is a law enforcement officer who testified. A law enforcement officer who was involved in the investigation from day one had contact with all of the parties. If this law enforcement officer testified falsely about the interview, and that interview was tainted, we have the corner house interview procedure for a reason. We have these procedures established for a reason, and that procedure needs to be followed. It was not followed in this case.
What wasn't followed? What the tainting, her absence?
To say that another party was involved, and they weren't. We don't know.
How is that evidence that the corner house interview was affected in any way?
His testimony, so Officer Sonstebo's testimony that he shut down the preliminary interview immediately to follow the procedures to get to a corner house interview. We know that wasn't true. We know that the person he said was with him, and which protocol establishes should be with him, was not with him in the school. We know he had contact with this young girl, opportunity to discuss the case, to potentially, you know, taint what her story was. Going into a corner house interview, which again, we have those procedures to protect, going into that corner house interview, this is a 10-year-old girl. Someone tells her something is correct. Who is she to question that this is correct? So again, you start to unravel each piece of the evidence. I think we have more questions than we have answers in this case.
We'll offer you a rebuttal.
Thank you.
Respondent.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Sarah Estep Larson for the Otter Tail County Attorney's Office. Thank you for your time today. Your Honor, we're here to request the finding that the district court was appropriate in declining an evidentiary hearing in this matter. As has been discussed through the questions of Your Honors, in this case, these issues are both NAFLA barred and time barred, as was found by the court, the lower court as well. The inclusion of, or the introduction of this affidavit by Nicole Thorson is not new evidence, particularly that could have been discovered at a previous time. There were references during the previous questioning about don't tell Miss Nikki, but I do believe that the underlying trial transcript shows that Officer Sonstebo went on to explain that that was not particularly just that phrasing. I believe that he stated at the time of the initial interview, which I will call the first interview where in which he had that initial discussion with the child, where that initial disclosure was made. He also then indicated that in wrapping that up, he had stated to the child, and this is not a direct quote, I don't have the transcript in front of me, but I believe that there was a reference to, you know, we don't need to talk to other people about this right now. You don't have to talk to Miss Nikki about this right now, because it was a part of the procedure where they stopped further interview or questioning to arrange for the corner house later that day. I do believe all of these instances took place on the same day. The
two interviews with Sonstebo?
Your Honor, my understanding of the underlying procedure was that in the morning, and I believe it was roughly around 10:30, 10:26, I believe was referenced in the trial transcript of Officer Sonstebo, he had met with the child, and to his recollection, as indicated at the trial, was that Miss Nikki was present, because this was held at the school as he was a school liaison officer, and Miss Nikki was the children's mental health coordinator there as well. And so based on some neglect reports, I believe he was there to meet with her on a child maltreatment or neglect reports that had been received, I believe, on April 16th, so just a few days prior, he went to speak with the child, and he has tape recorded the interview, or, well, digitally recorded, I would imagine, but that transcript was also provided previous to trial to trial counsel. And so there was this initial interview or discussion about the maltreatment reports that were received, and at that point, the child made some disclosure related to Mr. Barsness. I believe there was kind of an utterance of, like, I can't take this, or I don't want to do this, or I don't want to talk about this, wherein which he says, well, what are you talking about? There was some disclosure. There were a few, I believe, additional questions that were asked to clarify, primarily for, I believe, safety in the home, presence of, you know, to be sure that the disclosure that was made was clearly identified as a disclosure in which parties we were talking about. And at that point, Officer Sonstable stopped that discussion, as was.
It was during that discussion that he said, you don't have to talk to her, don't talk to Ms. Nicky.
Correct.
That, after. Which makes his trial testimony that he said she was present in conflict, right? Because if he's saying don't talk to her and she's there.
I believe that it doesn't necessarily, Your Honor, make that in conflict, because he could be saying, you know, you don't talk to me about this. Don't talk to anybody about this. You don't have to talk to Ms. Nicky about this. He doesn't indicate that she's not present. I believe he was trying to explain to the child that we're pausing this conversation for right now so that it can be we can wait to have this further discussion until the Clay County worker came down for the corner house interview that afternoon, which was then arranged within the same time frame and video recorded, I believe, which was also shown as shown to the trial court jury. And so there, when I say initial interview, I'm talking about that initial time frame when they had that initial disclosure. It was referenced that, you know, he stated that, well, then I stopped right away. But then there was testimony later that he asked more questions, or he admitted he asked more questions. I believe that was in the trial court transcript and can be reviewed. It was him explaining, the officer explaining, yes, we asked a few more questions to be sure we were ascertaining an actual disclosure in who we were talking about. But once it was ascertained to the point that there was a disclosure being made and this was a corner house appropriate type of questioning, that stopped with that instruction to the child, you know, don't talk to other people about this. You don't have to talk to Ms. Nicky, as the child was clearly familiar with Ms. Nicky, as indicated in the a briefing. I do believe there was reference to the child's previous issues with bullying and ongoing school issues. And obviously, if they were there for originally meeting for a neglect report, both Officer Sonstable and I do believe this individual, the mental health worker, Ms. Nicky, were familiar to the child. And so a specific instruction that you don't need to talk to Ms. Nicky about this, even if she was present, which the officer indicates she was, wouldn't be false testimony or perjury. It was his explanation of the fact that we have to cap this right now so we can do this through the official appropriate corner house interview, which was then conducted by a Clay County social worker. Officer Sonstable was in observance in a separate room. He was not there present with the child. And then that interview is what was referenced primarily through the courts in finding that there was strong evidence related to this. I believe the introduction of an affidavit, which could have been discerned through either there was plenty of discussion of Ms. Nicky or Ms. Nicole Thorson. I believe trial court counsel referenced her as Ms. Nicky because he made mention of, you know, not necessarily recalling how to say her last name. And so Ms. Nicky's presence was discussed frequently throughout Mr. Sonstable's, or Officer Sonstable, Sergeant Sonstable's testimony. And as the court has now indicated as well, there were additional affidavits that were included by Mr. Barsness on his pro se first post-conviction petition as well. He has that opportunity within that two-year time frame, definitely. He had counsel during his direct appeal. He made pro se post-conviction applications, in which he got additional affidavits from other people. He had the opportunity to receive this affidavit. And additionally, this affidavit relates to tangential issues. This is not an issue as to, there's reference to this thread, but this thread is not what affects this outcome. Here there was specific testimony. There was specific testimony by the child. There was the corner house interview, which was reviewed by the jury in full. The information that is contained in this, what is alleged to be new information, is only to state that there is potential conflict as to whether or not Ms. Nicole Thorson was or was not present during that initial disclosure of the child, which was not the key to this case. This was not anything that was testified as to about what Ms. Nicole said or didn't say. primarily, this was Officer Sonstovo's testimony related to what he observed, what he had done during this initial portion, and then the corner house interview. And it's noted that everything that Officer Sonstovo had discussed or done during this initial interview was recorded and was in the hands of trial counsel prior to, because there is reference to the transcript. And did you say this? And did we talk about that? And so these things were all known and available at the time of trial.
Although, was it known, or what I'm not remembering at this moment, what gave rise to the appellant's knowledge that she was not there? Because it was not evident at trial that she wasn't present, right? I mean, there wasn't testimony that conflicted about whether she was present, and there wasn't a document that showed she was not.
Correct. I believe that was briefly, Your Honor, I apologize for overstep. I believe that it was discussed, and I believe it was set forth also in the argument that the original transcript of this interview, the initial interview, indicated just conversation between Officer Sonstovo and the alleged victim, or the child in this case. There wasn't a reference to Nicole, Nicole Thorson, or Miss Nikki being present. And I believe that was addressed at trial once there was discussion of Miss Nikki, Nicole Thorson. I do believe the trial transcript reflects that there was a question about, well, she's not indicated in this transcript that we have, which was brought up by the defense counsel. And so it was pointed out, well, she's not necessarily identified here. There wasn't necessarily at the beginning of the interview, go around and state your name type of deal. And Officer Sonstovo indicated, well, I don't always identify everybody in the room. It's primarily if I'm the one talking and the child's the one talking, or if I'm talking to a defendant or things like that, we identify who's on the tape. And so there was...
Well, then isn't the affidavit from Miss Nikki that she wasn't present, isn't that new information? And what's your response to appellant's argument that this, that the court should have held a hearing to determine the question of actual innocence based on this new information?
Thank you, Your Honor. I don't believe that this is new information and that this was information that was ascertainable at trial. It was discussed, well, was she there or was she not there? Additionally, it wasn't brought up on the first post-conviction appeal or post-conviction petition, I believe, when there were additional affidavits obtained as well. So this was information that was available out there and thus NAFLA barred. Additionally, as to actual innocence, it's my understanding that the information needs to provide a status enough that if assumed to be true, actual innocence would be set forward, and then we would have an evidentiary hearing to review, is this information factual and true? In this case, this is a very thin thread. It is the allegation that, and again, discussing it or calling it perjured testimony or false testimony is, again, something that I would say is a mischaracterization. They're asserting that there is an individual who states that she was not there when another person states that she was there. This is not stating, this is not a situation where there's clear and proof of actual innocence. This isn't someone was at this crime scene at 10 o'clock on a Friday, but here is an actual video that I've obtained of them in Florida instead at 10 o'clock at the same time. Let's move forward to find out if this is a credible explanation. This is instead a very small question mark related to a tangential issue, which was not the primary testimony of Officer or Sergeant Sonstovo, and is not a direct proof of clear and convincing innocence in any manner. Your Honors, I note that I do have some additional time, but I believe that we would submit that because of NAFLA and because of the previous appeals that have been made in this case, the post-conviction request, all of these issues have been previously addressed by the district court and this court as well, and found to be NAFLA barred and time barred. I believe that this submission of Ms. Nikki is not new evidence that is clear and convincing proof of innocence. It is information that could have and should have been discovered or was available for previous appeal, even post-conviction within that two-year time frame, where in which there's the argument or assertion that he was pro se. However, he had appellate representation, and I do believe that statutory case law provides for counsel in that one instance, but that a pro se party raising an issue of ineffective assistance of counsel is not necessarily a new issue or a separate issue or a new circumstance. Nothing here has been demonstrated by Mr. Barsness to indicate that these that this information is new, exceptional, or non-frivolous. And so, Your Honors, I would request that the court confirm the lower court's finding that an evidentiary hearing on this matter is not required.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Rebuttal.
I'd like to address a few of the points that were brought up in the state's rebuttal. Nicole Thorson's presence in the interview and Officer Sonstebo's testimony that she was present serves to legitimize his investigation. This is not a matter of her mere presence in the interview, as the state would have you believe. It's her involvement in preparing for the interview, in organizing the interview. So it goes beyond just her presence there. This is not a tangential issue. If you impeach an officer for false testimony, it has a profound impact on the result of the trial. In fact, even in cases where perjured testimony is merely cumulative, that the prosecutor has failed to correct, the testimony must be considered and a new trial must be ordered when it's a material state witness, and without the correct testimony or the corrected testimony, the court would have reached a different conclusion. The state refers again to the strong case that they had. I want to just break that down a little bit. We have mom's testimony. She never witnessed any inappropriate behavior. We have dad's testimony that A.N. maybe reported something to him. He testified he was uncomfortable with Barsness in the home. He was not uncomfortable enough to remove Barsness from the home. He was not uncomfortable enough to intervene. And again, no actual witnessing of any conduct. We have the neighbor who said this relationship looks suspicious.
But we have a 10-year-old child. Maybe she was 11 by the time of trial. I haven't done the math. Testifying about what the defendant did to her.
We have a 10-year-old child who has significant issues, which are that go to her parenting and all sorts of issues. We have a 10-year-old child who is vulnerable, who is susceptible to influence. A 10-year-old child who may not be in the best home situation, a 10-year-old child who is looking to a law enforcement officer, someone she is supposed to trust, someone who she's developed a relationship with over the course of her time in school because he is the school liaison officer. We have that 10-year-old child who we know has had contact from Officer Sonstebo previously relating to SL, and relating to Mr. Barsness. So I think that the state referenced, I can't take it anymore. I can't take this anymore. She'd been contacted about a different issue, unrelating to her and unrelated to the investigation in the present case. So the fact that she may have misremembered or misstated something or gone along with what an officer was suggesting to her is not a remarkable thing. Kids tell lies, kids misremember facts, and when that happens, it's not unusual for them to stick with that. Now, the state points out that we have the corner house interview and we have her testimony at trial. Her corner house interview and her testimony at trial are largely consistent, but that was after a tainted first interview. That was after we have an officer who's present in the interview, who's given legitimacy to this initial interview by saying the school-based social worker was there and she was not. This is not a tangential issue. This is a law enforcement officer. This is a material state witness. There is a fundamental unfairness that occurred in this trial. The petitioner could not have addressed this on direct appeal, as the state seems to indicate he had counsel on direct appeal. It's not direct appellate counsel's role to investigate a case. They're bound by the record of the trial court. And in this case, we're alleging ineffective assistance of trial counsel. We then have appellate counsel who's not going to conduct an independent investigation. We do have a prior petition for post-conviction relief. The state can merely speculate about the access that Mr. Barsness had to investigate, you know, his own case, and how did he come up with certain affidavits. We don't know. We don't know that from the record. We do know that he was incarcerated. He was acting pro se.
Your time is up.
Thank you, Your Honors.
The matter has been well argued, and it is taken under advisement.
Thank you, Your Honor.